Unpopular opinion, but
Unpopular opinion.
You're listening to Unpopular Opinion, a podcast for professionals from all walks of life who want to hear success stories from innovators who've won by taking the path less traveled. In each episode, recovering journalist and content marketer Ashley Amber Saba interviews individuals who have prospered thanks to their genuinely unpopular opinions, despite warnings from naysayers, threats to their careers, and colossal obstacles. All rebels are welcome.
Hey, welcome to Unpopular Opinion. I'm your host, Ashley Amber Saba, and this episode is brought to you by my friends at Audience Ops. Audience Ops is a content marketing agency, and they produce every episode of my podcast. If you're looking to launch a podcast for your brand or your business, definitely let me know and I'll hook you up. Today, I'm joined by my friend, Caleb Whittle, head of marketing at Private Auto and host of the very popular Everyday Entrepreneurs podcast. Caleb, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashley. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you on. And I am very excited about the topic that Caleb is coming with us today. It's a little bit controversial when you think about how many people on LinkedIn are talking about, you know, going out there and starting their own business and just leaving behind corporate for good. But Caleb, he has the opinion that he's bringing to the table today of that he believes that you have a better chance of success being an employee than an entrepreneur. Can you tell everybody how you came to that conclusion?
Yeah, it comes from kind of my own experience experimenting with a little bit of entrepreneurship early in my career, being a freelancer for some time. In various different things. It wasn't even marketing, but diving into my career and realizing you can actually do a lot of what an entrepreneur does inside of a company without all of the risk that comes with being an entrepreneur. And I feel that allows someone to really grow in their career. And there's more opportunity for success in a career because you have access to mentors, you have access to a team, you aren't held hostage by, you know, your own clients if you are an entrepreneur or customers that way. Kind of a strong way of saying that, but having the ability to have a company that you still have the ability to take ownership within your role allows you kind of the freedom to learn very quickly without all of the risks that come with entrepreneurship.
I think that when the pandemic hit, that was when I started noticing a lot of people exploring the idea of, and it could have been job insecurity and things like that too, that played into the factor of it. And it used to be a little bit easier to get money too. Yeah. Of course, the economy has changed now, but a lot of people, I think, toyed with that idea at that time. And maybe it was also because they had a little bit more time on their hands because they didn't have a social life anymore for a little while during COVID, and they didn't have the commute that they used to have. But a lot of people have felt like, I started hearing in late 2020 and 2021, just anytime I logged on to social media, it felt like people talking about how they wanted to go on their own, that they wanted to do full-time freelance, that they wanted to come like up with a new business idea. And a lot of them just kind of hit the ground running. And for a lot of people that I know, it did not pan out the way that they hoped. And even if they got a good beginning, the economy that has been given to us lately, a lot of them have ended up having to go back to jobs at this point anyway. What's your perspective on becoming an entrepreneur during economic times of uncertainty like we have now?
I think it all depends on your own personal situation. So if you are, you know, young, no family, not a lot to tie you down, like go for it 100%, take the leap. Like you don't even have to have an idea yet. Like you have the ability to experiment very quickly and learn very quickly. If you do have a family to provide for, if you do have, you know, a mortgage and these financial obligations, it becomes much more risky. Now, I'm not going to tell people what to do. It's whatever you're comfortable doing, but taking that leap then becomes a lot more difficult. And I've known people who have taken that leap, but they plan for it for a few years. They were like, all right, we're going to build up savings. Like, I'm gonna have a runway of 6 months. And then if it doesn't pan out in 6 months, then I know I have enough skill set to then go back into the job market. And I think that's fantastic. I never want to discourage anyone from going out and trying an idea or going on their own, but especially in times of economic downturn, that is a way to bring in additional income. And I am a huge fan of side hustles. I love them. I think most people should have them at some point. And so you have your 9 to 5, then from 5 to 9, that's where you're working on this entrepreneurial idea that you might have. And that allows you to do it without the risk, especially in a financial downturn, to see, okay, can you own your own revenue stream for yourself? And then you can start to scale. And then if it gets to the point where it's no longer 5 to 9, it's now 5 to 1 a.m., then you might want to think about, okay, are you making enough to cover your basic expenses to then take that leap? I think there's a much less risky way to dive into entrepreneurship if you're already midway through your career or wherever you're at, especially in times of financial downturn.
Can you tell everybody a little bit about your background? I know it's unique and winding, and I learned a lot about you during our pre-call that I didn't know too. I think people will be curious.
Yeah. So as Ashley mentioned in the intro, I'm currently a head of marketing at a technology startup in disguise in the automotive industry, but my career started way back as an intern in in-store marketing for an outdoor sporting goods company. But even before that, I didn't always know what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. Like, that was what I wanted to do in high school. I even did junior ROTC in high school, which is like the high school military class that like preps you to go into the military. And then it turns out the Air Force really wants you to have good eyesight and good lungs, which I have neither. So then I said, okay, if I can't fly them, I'll build them. And so that drove my college decision, was aerospace engineering. And after about 2 years of that, and actually living out of country for 2 years on a service mission for my church, when I came back, I took a marketing class as an elective. And I was like, oh, this is way more fun than calculus 3 and thermodynamics. I was like, okay, how do I do this? And that kind of shifted what I was going to do in college and changed my major to Spanish. So then I could graduate in the same 4 years that would have taken me. Otherwise, I would have had to repeat years. Bunch of reasons why, I won't get into that. And so during the last year of my Spanish undergrad, I applied for an internship at an outdoor sporting goods company. I had done some experiments with like social media marketing and translating and like trying to, realizing I don't have any experience with marketing. I should probably try to get some. And so did some small projects that way, and had a full-time job before I graduated my undergrad. And that kind of kicked off that path. The goal was always to get an MBA, and that would be how I would get business education. And so Spanish was a quick way to do that. And so then I went into MBA school while I was an intern slash full-time position. And yeah, so since then I've worked, grew in that outdoor sporting goods company, and then jumped over into the music industry because I had a boss that pulled me over. He left to go join Gibson Guitars. And he said, Caleb, we need someone to help run digital marketing. Come join us. I said, okay. And I think a lot of that has to do with this topic of entrepreneurship, because when you behave like an entrepreneur inside of a company, you make an impact, and then people want you to come work for them as they move throughout the companies that they're at as well.
You're pretty much a professional pivoter then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I even use this meme in a presentation where it's Ross in the movie, or in the show Friends, going up the stairs with the couch, and he's yelling out, pivot, pivot. Like, that's me, like, in a nutshell. I'd say every few years there's something that happens that causes a big pivot.
You just have a lot of interest. It's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel that the fact that you've discovered that within you has allowed you to elevate more quickly in the companies that you've worked at?
I would say so. not inherently from just like calling myself an entrepreneur, like that means, you know, nothing, but just from the aspects that would make up an entrepreneur, someone who takes ownership of their respective areas and behaves like a CEO of their job. And so figures out what that means in terms of new ideas to grow what's in their scope of influence, but also networking inside of the company to bring each area together. Like, I love being a part of product meetings. I love being a part of even like supply chain meetings when I was at a consumer goods company. And it's like, if you aren't an entrepreneur, you don't really care about that because you're just focused on your job. You're like, ah, it's not my job. I'll just focus on doing this right now. But I was like, no, my job affects 10 other people's lives inside of the company. So let me go learn about what they do. And you find inefficiencies, you find ways to improve that relationship, to improve the working nature of how you collaborate internally. And that makes it really exciting too. Like, everyone's like, oh, entrepreneurship is super exciting. And I'm like, yeah, so it was entrepreneurship because it's the same thing. You're just doing it with people inside of your company. So having that knowledge of how my role affects the entire business and how each other role affects the entire business kind of highlights you for leadership roles, because you no longer view yourself as just an individual contributor. You view yourself as someone who is able to actually make an impact. And so then as promotions come up or as new positions are created, they look at someone who has that initiative to go out and try new things and pull together teams to make that happen. I would say 1, 2, 3 of the positions that I've held out of the 9 didn't exist before I was there. So like, positions were created because they saw this need, or one of them, I even presented this need and I was like, hey, we need someone to own this. And then they're like, okay, you do it. Like, okay, great.
So your podcast, which I mentioned at the beginning, Everyday Entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. I know that you have passion, obviously, about that concept, but what made you decide that you wanted to go out and produce a show about it and interview other professionals like-minded?
I felt I wasn't the only one who felt this way, who was like, I mean, I struggled a lot in the early days of my career with not going out on my own or like being an entrepreneur, because I followed Gary Vaynerchuk, Damon John. I watched Shark Tank. I like was heavily influenced by these successful entrepreneurs, and then frustrated with myself, like, oh, I don't have a good enough idea. Or, oh, I tried that and it didn't work. And it was frustrating. And I was like, okay, I can't be the only one. And so I actually put out a poll on LinkedIn and I was like, hey, I think it was like, would you consider yourself an entrepreneur? And there were quite a few people that said yes. And so then those were the first guests that I had on my show, because I thought, hey, here's a topic that I don't see covered very much and applies to the majority of people, because the majority of people are employees at a company. And so let's explore how these people's career has progressed and how they were able to use skills like an entrepreneur, but use them inside of a company to kind of progress throughout their career.
What kind of guest lessons have you learned from people who have come on, whether they be just crazy situations that they've been in or just things that you've taken away that you've been able to apply to your own career?
Ooh. So there's 61 episodes that are live. So that's a lot of guests.
Oh, yeah.
I think some of the biggest takeaways that I've had is, number one, it's okay to be a jack of all trades. In fact, you can use it to your advantage. And that's helped me a lot, because I don't like being pigeonholed in one thing. And sure, that may impact like my reach on LinkedIn or like the other things I'm doing, but it's not fun to me to not talk about multiple topics. And so I've had several guests that have talked about this need of being a jack of all trades, because you need to understand what other people are doing and how it affects your job. And if you're interested in multiple things, you're able to relate to them a lot more. Like I am a marketer who can spend all day in a spreadsheet and the next day spend all day at a video shoot, and my excitement and joy is the exact same. And so I'm able to relate to, you know, a finance person who spends all day in a spreadsheet because I know what their pains are and how to figure out those formulas and how we can help each other. And then at the same time, I'm able to relate to creatives and how they're able to produce content and what looks good, what doesn't look good, how to build that relationship. And it's really hard to build those relationships if you're not at least somewhat a jack of all trades. That would probably be the biggest one. I would say the second one is this aspect of building relationships as an employee, like getting out of the office, whether it's home office or actual office, and having lunch with people, exploring, you know, what people do in different industries and different roles and different seniority levels. As part of this podcast, I've been able to network with some amazing people. And the third guest I had on the show, I now consider like an extremely close friend, and we text each other relatively often. And I'm like, that would have never happened if it weren't for taking the initiative of starting a podcast, but like having that networking effect be a priority in my career. In fact, I have my current role because of networking, like because of relationships that I had built. And so that is another key theme that has brought out through all those guests, is like, you just got to be excited to talk to people and to build relationships, to go out to lunch with no agenda. You're just there to build a relationship, and that can have huge effects on your career in the future. So I think those are like the two main things that I've taken away from all those guests that I've had on the show.
Well, love it. What kind of tactical steps can people take to implement more of an entrepreneur lifestyle in their jobs?
Love this question. Because it's all fun and games until someone asks you like, okay, how do I do it? What do I do? So I like to break it down into three key steps that you can do. First one is take a look at your current role and how it affects the vision of the company and where the gaps are. Like, in order to achieve the vision of whatever company you're at, and you look at your role and then you figure out, okay, what are the gaps and how can I fill in those gaps to help the company achieve it? And that can be like a presentation to your boss, presentation to the CEO. It can be collaborating with other team members on your team or on other departments in the company to really figure out how your role can be elevated to affect the outcome of the company. Along those same lines, kind of step number two is reach out to senior leadership at your company and have lunch with them. Like, I know that's a very direct thing to do. It's kind of cheesy, but you won't be able to elevate your own understanding of the company unless you talk with people who are setting the strategy for your company. And I've only heard in all the episodes and all the people I've met at events, all of that, I've only ever heard of one time where someone said no to like a lower level employee wanting to take them to lunch. So your chances are pretty high to actually have that time, but that allows you to get face time with someone who makes an impact and has influence within the company. That will set you up for success later in your career. So step one is identifying the gaps with your career and with your role. Step two is talking with people in higher level than you. And then step three is to always have the mindset of what else can I do? So when you're in your meetings, when you're having that lunch with the higher up, when you are looking at the gaps between your role, always ask, what else can I do? Because an entrepreneur doesn't just sit back and hope that their company grows. They are in the weeds. They are trying new things. They are always trying to figure out what will work and how to grow their company. That's the mindset you need to take as an entrepreneur. And so by asking the question, what else can I do? You are showing some initiative and showing the willingness to kind of go above and beyond in order to help the company achieve those goals. So I think those three things are like baby steps to becoming a true entrepreneur inside of a company.
I just wanted to take a quick moment to thank the Audience Ops team for producing my show. They make it easy for me to focus on talking to amazing people like Caleb. That way I don't have to waste a lot of time doing the technical aspects of the podcast that I don't enjoy as much. I definitely recommend anyone interested in checking them out. They can handle the creation of your assets and the publication and all of that. And then you could just get cool people like Caleb onto your show. Anyway, back to you, Caleb. I want to talk another unpopular opinion, at least it was to me when that was on your LinkedIn, about your morning routine.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Let's talk it out. How do you wake up that early?
All right. So for those listeners who don't know who I am or didn't see that post, I am a proud waker-upper at 4 a.m. So I wake up at 4 a.m. every morning. I have probably for about 3 months now. And it's awesome. I do it for two reasons. Number one, I have become slightly addicted to the gym. And so I am very like excited about progress I'm seeing with weightlifting and things like that. So that gets me motivated. And if I don't go before work, I don't go at all. Because I know myself. Number two, those extra hours in the morning are actually really helpful to try to ground myself each day. I struggle a lot with like scatterbrainedness. Like once I sit down, like go into work, I do a million things a million different ways, and it can be hard to take a step back and like actually pay attention to what's going on. So that helps me in the morning. I will say that is very early and not everyone is primed for waking up that early. I have my pre-workout has 250 milligrams of caffeine. So that's what gets me up in the morning.
Do you have it next to your bed? That way you can have the energy to even get out of there.
No, I should. I should. Yeah. So, but another thing about that, like, I know it's crazy to wake up that early. I'd spend like 2 hours at the gym. So in order to work out before work, I need to get up that early. But figuring out that habit took like 6 months last year to figure out what worked, what didn't work. How can I be consistent at the gym? And so like to just do it cold turkey with no reason tomorrow, if your listener's like, oh, I'm gonna get up at 4 a.m. tomorrow, like, good luck. It's gonna be really difficult and probably not gonna do it. I realized that like I love excuses. And so I would use every excuse in the book to not go to the gym. I think one of them one morning was like, I don't want to wake up my wife by sliding my silent, like it doesn't make any noise, but sliding the drawer out from my chest of drawers to get my gym shorts. I was like, I don't want to wake her up. So I'm just going to stay in bed. And so like now I put out stuff in the hallway the night before. So like all those little things that I changed to create this system, hello, Atomic Habits, if you've read the book, that then allows me to be consistent with that goal of getting to the gym. So that's kind of like the source of waking up at 4 a.m. Side note, waking up at 4 a.m., it will be really hard for you to go to bed later. So like I am in bed by 10 p.m. every night, like every night. And it kind of sucks because my wife is not a morning person. And so she's like, do we really? I'm like, listen, if we don't go to bed now, I'm going to get like 4 hours of sleep and then tomorrow's really going to suck. So, you know, we have a little balance there. But you do it enough, you then have to, like, you naturally go to bed earlier because your body's just like, I'm done. I'm not staying up anymore.
Does she get up and go to the gym too?
No, she does not. She's a school counselor. So currently she is not working, which is awesome. But she has her own little morning routine. She does. She goes to the gym after work. She just, it's part of her schedule now. So no, she does not wake up that early. She thinks I'm crazy, but by the act of going to bed earlier, she does get a nice, like 8 to 9 hours, you know, worth sleep every night. So she
I think that's a huge benefit.
Yeah, exactly.
Which entrepreneurs do you admire?
Ooh, any entrepreneur who is, taking risks inside of their company and taking ideas. No, I'm just kidding. That's kind of a lame answer. One of the early guests on my podcast, his name is McKay Savage. He rocks. Like, he did a post of like loving lock picking. And I'm like, this is the most random thing ever. And as I got to know him, he has all these little random side things and like learns things. And I was like, this guy just takes initiative to learn. Like, that's another key attribute of an entrepreneur, is just someone who learns and wants to learn. And so he's someone that kind of stands out to me. Nick Staggy, who's also on LinkedIn, he founded the Grounded Company. So he is no longer an entrepreneur. He is now an entrepreneur. But his path to get there is really unique and cool. And I've had 5 employees of his on my podcast. So he obviously knows something about entrepreneurship to create a culture where that many people, like, we were able to have, you know, a 30 plus minute long conversation about entrepreneurship. Those would probably be the main two. I do want to do another shout out just because she's the one who connected us, but Meredith Metzger, like, she crushes it in entrepreneurship, and like her shift from journalism into marketing is really cool. That's another benefit of entrepreneurship, is you can go across industries relatively easy because you know how to apply your skills that you know that you've learned to different areas. So I think those three would probably be the highlights.
Love Meredith. She's like she was in Idaho, so I called her my Idaho twin for a while. She has since moved to Colorado, but still twins. So I feel like we have very, very similar careers, trajectories and things like that. A few days ago, you posted on LinkedIn vulnerably about burnout, which I thought was admirable, and about how it was impacting you. Do you have any advice on how people can maybe recognize when it's happening to them before it gets too overwhelming?
I think the biggest indicator that I've noticed is you aren't able to turn off work. So if you aren't, like, over the weekend, if you go do something with your spouse and you're like checking your phone constantly, or you're like constantly thinking about work, that's usually a big indicator, because it means you're working so hard to the point where it's bleeding over into your personal life. And that can be a pretty big indicator of burnout maybe coming, because like you can't shut off the work brain. I don't believe in work-life balance. That doesn't exist. There's no such thing as that. But work-life harmony might be a better way to say that. And so, sure, like if you need to set aside like a couple hours of Sunday afternoon to plan out your week, like that's not what I'm talking about. It's more you're doing personal things where someone needs your full attention and all you can think about is work. That might be where it starts to kind of creep in a little bit. I would also say where you're starting to miss the mark at work often, but you don't think you are. Like you think you're putting forward your best effort, and then you start getting feedback where it's like, hey, like we're missing this, or I don't really feel like you have a good grasp around this. So you're putting forth a lot of effort, you're pushing the gas really hard, but you're not going very far. And I think that can be another big indicator to burnout. That's what was happening to me. And I was like, like I started having some misses at work and I was like, okay, I need to change something. And so having like more structured days and more structured planning is what's starting to help me recover from the feeling of burnout.
What do you think that leaders can do to have more productive and engaging one-on-ones with their team? I know you have had a couple of guests on your show who have talked about this as well, but I just think it's a good topic for entrepreneurship, especially leaders who are maybe trying to transform their teammate members into that mentality, especially.
Yeah, I love one-on-ones. Like, I've never had bad one-on-ones, but specific, like not me with like my team member, but like me with my boss. Like, I'm still working to have better one-on-ones now. Even I think you're always learning how to make a better impact with your employee. I've seen multiple different ways of it happening. I've seen ways where like it's all in the employee, and I kind of like some of that, because then it's like, hey, listen, we don't even have to talk about work. Like, what's going on in your life? Like, especially in this virtual world, we're not able to go out to lunch frequently or spend some quality time with our employees. That makes it difficult to truly get to know them and be able to figure out how to help them grow as a person. So leaving on the employee can create that, because if you talk about things that aren't even about work, you start to get to know them as a person. But then I would say us as like managers also need to step in a little bit to create some, at least at the beginning, to create some structure to that one-on-one. So I think having an effective one-on-one specific to helping create a culture of entrepreneurship, making sure you as a manager have clear, like a clear vision of where your employee wants to go, and making sure that they know that too. Some employees don't even know what a vision is, and they're like, I don't know. I'm just happy to be here. It's like, okay, but if you're in that position in 10 years, something's wrong. So, making sure that vision exists, and also helping show them the steps on how to get there, how to achieve that vision, especially if it's to get to where you are or to get to where your boss is or a different industry or whatever it might be. That's really important as well. So then you're able to give actionable steps to your employee. And then third is making sure that the employee knows that like their entire career doesn't have to be at your company and creating a safe space for them to say, hey, you know what? I don't know if I want to be here in a year. And it's like, okay, great. Where do you want to go? Like, let's start now with making the right connections and helping build that employee. Because once they have that safety, once they have that safe space, it's really cool what happens to like their initiative and the questions they ask and the ideas that they bring to the table. Because then it's no longer a worry of like, oh man, now I have to like go apply to a bunch of places and I don't want my boss to know, but like I'm stuck and like it's awkward as an employee to do that. But if your boss is like, hey, let's run together, I'll help you out, then that allows that employee to just, it opens them up. And I've seen it to where having that safe space, that employee ends up staying for longer than they originally planned. Like, because we're like, oh, cool, this is actually a good environment. I am experiencing the growth I want. So I think those are a few pointers there on one-on-ones.
Love it. Okay. I ask everybody at the end of my show to debunk an unpopular opinion, basically anything that you think people are deeming unpopular that you think is more of a cop-out to get more clicks. Do you have anything that comes to mind?
I mean, we kind of already talked about the 4 a.m. thing. Like
that's yours specifically.
Yeah. That's my, like, last week I saw a post that was like some fake schedule, and I was like, yeah, it's also total BS. And like, no one's going to get up at 4 a.m. And I'm like, it actually works pretty dang well. I think that's probably the biggest unpopular opinion is like, just do what works for you. Like, don't, and you don't have to talk about it. Like, I had that routine for 6 months before I decided I was going to make a post, and I was like, you know what? Like, this will just be kind of fun to like go against people who are like, no, you don't have to wake up at 8 a.m. Like, it's fine. And I'm like, or you can not. And it's also fine. Yeah. Like, just, it's okay to wake up at 4 a.m. if that's what you want to do. And it's okay to wake up at 8 a.m. if that's what you want to do.
We do a lot of that. Like, it's an umbrella. You think that everybody has to fit under one claim that you make. And a lot of the times it just depends on like you. That's why I don't like to give LinkedIn advice generally, because I'm afraid I'm going to get all those comments like, but not that time or not this situation, not me as a human being. It's like, fine. Like, I don't even want to help anymore then.
But
you don't want to make huge claims. Like, if you do what I do, you will be successful. Like, I don't ever do that because I don't know if it will be the recipe for whoever is looking at it.
Right. But, right. Like, and if you find people like me, like if you find someone who's like, no, you should get up at 4 a.m. and like, it's going to be the most productive morning ever. It's like, what do you do with those hours? Like, you could just sit there, stare at the ceiling and be like questioning my life right now. And it's not going to be productive. Like, it all depends on you. So like, always take that advice with a grain of salt. And that's something I struggled with early on in my career, because I did follow these amazing entrepreneurs. It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this and this. And all right. Gary Vee says, all right, you should do that. And I do it and nothing happens. And I'm like, oh, that was dumb. And it's like, well, yeah, I didn't do it the way he did it. And I didn't do it for the situation that worked for myself. So yeah, that's, it's, the whole, especially the routine thing, like having a morning routine. I'm trying to get better at this, but like, I don't do anything regarding mindfulness and I'm okay. But I know that's an area that could be kind of interesting. So like, I'm starting to explore it a little bit, but like people who are like, oh no, you got to have a firm morning routine. You're going to spend 30 minutes, you know, meditating. You're going to spend 30 minutes doing this and that. It's like, okay, if I try to spend 30 minutes meditating, I'm going to end up on like how awesome Jim and Pam's relationship was on The Office. Like, that's not going to help me with my day. Like,
I mean, I'd prefer to do that than to meditate.
Yeah. Right. Like, so like, okay, maybe I start with like 5 minutes. I'm just like, okay, what is my vision for this year? Like, I typically suck at personal goal setting. I can improve, but there's a million ways to goal set. So it's just figuring out what works for you. Like, that's it. It took me 6 months to build the gym habit I have now because I was figuring out what works for me. So
it's funny because if you give, like, I have not touched my morning routine much at all. And I have a little kid and it kind of depends on what kind of mood she wakes up in anyway, like what happens to me that day. But I do know, I just talked about the fact, I mentioned Death Wish Coffee Company like a couple of weeks ago. Okay. And I don't know what I did, but I basically recommended them on LinkedIn. And then the social media manager contacted me and was like, give me your address. I'm going to give you coffee. What kind of coffee do you like? And I was like, yeah, give me coffee. And I tried to like, give them like a kind, like, oh, look what they did. I like every day I have Death Wish Coffee Company. Like, it's 2:42 PM for me now. I'm still drinking Death Wish Coffee Company coffee, but I mentioned them and I had like a lot of people were like, oh, cool. They did that, blah, 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 blah. And then I had a message that was like, you should not drink that coffee and you shouldn't have multiple cups of that coffee. And it's going to basically blow your heart out and you will die. And you didn't take Death Wish Seriously, like it was like this huge, like cautionary note on LinkedIn. And I was like, I'm not even allowed to talk about coffee.
Apparently not. Yeah. You can never please anyone, which once you like realize that, it's actually kind of freeing because then you just don't care anymore. But huge caveat to me waking up at 4 a.m. I don't have kids. So if I had kids, that may be very, I mean, I may be waking up at 4 a.m., but it's because my kid's awake, not because I'm going to the gym. Yep. So like, so that's a huge caveat to that whole like morning routine thing. I'm like, well, I can do it because it's pretty much just me and my wife. And so I set my own schedule. I'm not held accountable to a child's schedule yet.
It's so, more like held hostage.
Yeah. Held hostage. There we go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, where can people go if they want to find out more about you? Obviously, they're going to go to your LinkedIn after this and check you out. Do you have anywhere else you would like them to visit?
No. So yeah, LinkedIn, I'm super active there. Just LinkedIn/in/Caleb Whittle. My podcast is available on any platform. So Spotify, Apple, et cetera, wherever you listen. It's just Everyday Intrapreneurs. Those would probably be the two main areas. I have a TikTok, but I'm not saying what the handle is because I'm, you know, trying to build it in, you know, in stealth mode right now.
I'm going to find LinkedIn. It.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you again for coming on the show. Thank you for having me on your show back in the day. If anybody wants to go find that and draw that up, it's out there too. But, Caleb's show, I've watched at least probably 40 episodes, I think, now. I'm gonna have to go through and count them up and give you a final tally, but I have watched or listened to you a lot of them. And I love that you've done that. You've had amazing guests on. Thank you for doing it.
Yeah, thank you for listening. You're one of the good ones, one of the good listeners there. So thank you, appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you. All right, well, you have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Ashley.
Thanks for listening to Unpopular Opinion. This episode was produced by Audience Ops. If you're looking for help launching a podcast, Audience Ops handles all the legwork so you can focus on providing the subject matter expertise. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow Ashley's show on Spotify, Apple, or YouTube.